अर्जुनस्यादौ कुर्वन् गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्ण। वेलकम बैक टू द भगवद् गीता भक्तिशास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर नाउ इन 6.24। वी डिस्कस द समाधि वर्सेस एंड नाउ कृष्ण विल टॉक अबाउट हाउ वन कैन अटेन द स्टेट ऑफ समाधि। सो द चैप्टर एज आई एक्सप्लेन हैज अ फ्लो फ्रॉम साधना टू सिद्ध, देन अगेन फ्रॉम साधना टू सिद्ध, and then again from sadhana to siddha. And as it moves forward, in the first progression, it talks about Brahman realization, that is from verses 10 to 15. Then from 16 to 23, it talks about Paramatma realization. And 24 to 32, it talks about Bhagwan realization. That's how we are progressing. So let's start with the verse 24 now. So sanishchayena yoktavyo योगो निर्विन्न चेतसा संकल्पत्र भवान कामांस त्यक्त्वा सर्वान शेषतः। सो मनसैवेन्द्रिय ग्रामं विनियम्य समन्ततः स निश्चयेन योक्तव्यो। सो वन स्टार्ट्स प्रैक्टिसिंग विद डिटर्मिनेशन। स निश्चयेन, निश्चय मीन्स डिटर्मिनेशन। वी हैव डिस्कस्ड अर्लियर in our Upadeshamrita about how utsahan nishchayat dhairyat. So sa nishchayena yoktavyo, with determination one engages. Yogo anirvinna chetasa, anirvinna. Nirvinna means rejected and deviated. So nirvinna, one can rejected, deviated. Anirvinna chetasa, one does not let oneself get deviated. So, one engages in devotional service, when in the practice of yoga in general. It can also refer to devotional service in the ultimate sense. So, nishchayena, with determination. And determination, what does determination mean? That means there is no deviation. So, actually, the nature of the mind and the nature of the world are such that they will take us off track. But we bring ourselves back on track again and again and yet again. That's the essential process of bhakti yoga. And of any yoga in general. So, yogo anirvinna chetasa. And what do we need to be able to do this? Sankalpa prabhavan kamams. There are many material desires which come up. Kamams is material desire. And sankalpa is the resolution to enjoy those material desires. There is sankalpa and there is vikalpa. So, sankalpa means I want this. Vikalpa is I don't want this. Sankalpa manifests itself as the karma section in the Vedic scriptures, karma kanda. Yes, this is how I want to enjoy this and this is what I will do to enjoy it. So in a sense, the difference between sankalpa and kama is sankalpa prabhavans kamams. What does it mean is that because there is kam, there is a desire to enjoy, and then that leads to the resolution. Sankalpa means resolution. Resolution to enjoy. So one gives up the resolution to enjoy that is born of lust. It's significant. Krishna is not saying over here, one gives up lust, because giving up lust will take a long time. The lusty desires may come and they may stay in our mind, but we decide not to act with them. So in the Bhagavatam also, in the 7th canto, when it is talked about how different anathas can be overcome, it is asankalpat jayet kamaha. Asankalpat jayet kamaha means that by making firm resolutions, one can break free. One can get rid of the karma. So one decides. So the acharyas give the example, Chakravarti Pada and Srila Prabhupada also, that if one decides on Ekadashi, I'm not going to eat grains. In that resolution, once it is there, by not making plans to eat grains on Ekadashi, one is able to at least save off that desire for eating for that particular day. So like that, there is a difference between desiring and planning. So desiring is something which you may not be able to avoid. But planning is something which you can avoid. So sankalpa prabhavan kamams. That means from kama, the sankalpa that is born, one gives up. Tyaktva sarvan asheshataha. So one gives him tyaktva. So Krishna is very emphatic over there. If you want to be anirvinna, if we want to be sanishchayena yoktavya, what do we have to do? Tyaktva sarvan asheshataha. we give up all the material desires, ashishata, don't keep even one desire. You know, if there's a dam, the dam may be a gigantic structure made of extremely strong stone or concrete or such other material. But if there is one crack in it, that one crack is enough. Through that one crack, water will go little, then little more, and then more. And then eventually, through that crack, the water will go through in such a force, such a quantity that eventually, because of that, the whole dam can collapse. If that hole, that crack is not fixed in time. So a tiny crack can lead to a mighty crash. A tiny crack can lead to a mighty crash. Therefore, that tiny crack should also be sealed. That's why Krishna is telling over here, Tyaktva Sarvan Asheshata. So there's a double emphasis over here. Sarvan is one emphasis, all. And Asheshataha is another emphasis, nothing remaining. That means, give it up completely. Tyaktva Sarvan Asheshata. And then Manasai Vendriya Gramam. What does one do? Manasa. Indriya Gramam. That means with the mind and with the senses. Niniyamya Samantataha. Samantataha. So one, with the mind and the senses, one brings the brings oneself under control. So Manasaivendriya Gramam. So Prabhupada says, control all the senses on all sides by the mind. Now sometimes the question arises that does the mind drag the senses? Does the mind take the senses in the wrong direction or the senses take the mind in the wrong direction? Actually, it can happen both ways. The mind can take the senses in the wrong directions, or the senses can take the mind in the wrong directions. How is both ways possible? It depends on where is the trigger of temptation coming from. Sometimes the trigger for temptation comes from outside. That means we see something externally which agitates us, and when it agitates us, then from the senses the trigger comes in and it triggers us internally. Then the imagination, the fascination, all that gets stimulated, and then we act on it. So when the trigger of temptation is coming from outside to inside, that means the senses are agitating the mind. And sometimes the trigger of temptation can come from inside. That means we remember based on our past life. And what do we remember based on that? We remember that, oh, this is what went wrong. This is what I had done in the past. Now we don't think of it as wrong at that time. We just remember, oh, this is what I had done. And we just remember, oh, it was so enjoyable at that time. So we get into that. And when we get into that, the trigger of temptation, the mind gets agitated. And then the mind takes the senses towards sense gratification. That means, first we don't necessarily see some provocative object externally, but we imagine something internally. And then we ourselves go toward the sense object. And then we indulge in it. So, Manasaivendriya Gramam Vinyamya Sanantataha. Now, Krishna is telling over here, with the mind, control the senses. Now, the significance of this is that the yogi who is practicing Ashtanga Yoga has already withdrawn away from the world of temptation. The yogi is no longer situated in the materialistic environment. The yogi has gone to the jungle. And in that sense, in the environment of the forest, there are not many external triggers of temptation. So, the triggers of temptation for a yogi who has gone to the forest are primarily internal. And with the mind, one controls the senses. That means that one understands that the mind may come up with some memories. Oh, I had enjoyed like that, I had done like that, I had done like that. And then once those desires come up, then one starts acting on the senses. So, what one controls at the level of the mind, and then one doesn't let the senses get active. So within the mind, one controls the senses. That means we don't go towards the sense objects and don't let the senses get exposed to sense objects by placing us in that environment where such contact would happen too much. So for us, we can't avoid the contact. We live in a contaminated environment where there are provocative stimuli all around us. So how do we deal with them? We deal with them by inner restraint. So, Manasaivendriya Gramam Vinyamya Samantataha. So, the point is, externally, whether there are triggers or not, the real fall actually happens internally first. That's why in the 2.62 also, Krishna talks about Dhyayato Vishayan Pumsa. as the beginning of the fall. It isn't a drushyato vishyan pumsa. It is not seeing the sense objects. It is contemplating on sense objects that begins the downward fall. So now all material desires, one gives them up and one fixes oneself on the Supreme Lord. So now here Krishna is not telling exactly what one should fix on. He will tell it later on in the Bhagavad Gita. But we understand the Bhagavad Gita ultimately recommends the pursuit of Bhakti Yoga. And in Bhakti Yoga, one is recommended to fix the mind on the Supreme Lord. Now here the yogi is trying to learn, go inwards and trying to fix the mind on the Adhyatma Tattva. It may be Atma, it may be Paramatma, depending on how evolved the yogi's understanding is. So, the Prabhupada in this purport gives the story of the sparrow and the ocean who had taken the eggs of the sparrow. And the sparrow was determined to get the eggs back, and when the eggs could not, the ocean did not care, then the sparrow became determined, I will dry up the ocean. The determination was impossible, but the impossible determination attracted the unstoppable power of Garuda. And Garuda said, I will dry up the ocean. And the ocean took it very seriously and gave the eggs back. So what does this illustration demonstrate, exemplify? Actually, our conditionings are like an ocean. It's material existence itself compared to an ocean sometimes. And within that, our conditionings are also oceanic. And deep within those conditionings is the love of God. It's like the bird had its eggs, which are taken away by the ocean. So deep under this vast ocean of conditionings, there is the potential love of God. The love for God which has been misdirected now to other things. So for us, to remove all our conditionings is next to impossible. But if we just keep practicing devotional service, so every Maha Mantra that we chant is like removing one drop from the ocean. It is one moment we are trying to live purely. So keep practicing, keep practicing. Just by the every moment that we try to remember Krishna, try to serve Krishna, it's like removing one drop from the ocean. We can never dry up the ocean. But by our sincere endeavor, we can attract the mercy of the Lord. And when we attract the mercy of the Lord, then the Lord does miracles. And the Lord enables us. Actually, it is the Lord who manifests His miraculous potency through the spiritual master. The Garuda represents the spiritual master over here. And then one is able to become free. One is able to become rescued, liberated from the conditioning, and reinstated in our original pure love for Krishna. So, Prabhupada says in the purport that it may appear to be a very difficult job, but if anyone follows the principles with great determination, the Lord will surely help. For God helps those who help themselves. So now, this is a common saying among people today, God helps those who help themselves. What is the Vedic understanding of this? Prabhupada himself is quoting it. So now, many times when people, materialistic people, or people who are not devotionally minded quote this, actually their emphasis is often on, don't just sit and pray, don't just do this puja, don't just japa, work. You know, those who help themselves, God will help them. So the idea is, so often for them, when they speak, their emphasis is not on God helps, their emphasis is on help themselves. So the emphasis is what? You help yourself, then God will help you. So for them, God's help is like a sideshow. The real thing is, you help yourself. Unless you endeavor, you're not going to get the result. So often people talk about it in such a way, don't waste your time in praying. Don't waste your time in just doing all sort of nonsense. Just actually work. Help yourself. Then God will help you. So in principle, the statement is true. But the emphasis has to be clearly understood. Actually, when Prabhupada is speaking the story, the point is, it is God's help which is decisive. So it is God's help which brings about the result. And God's help cannot be neglected, should not be neglected just for the sake of helping ourselves. In fact, the best way we can help ourselves is by taking God's help. The best way we can help ourselves is by taking God's help. So God helps those who help themselves, that is true. But how do we help ourselves? By taking God's help. So in fact, we don't even have to take God's help. God is already there in our heart and He wants to help us. We simply have to stop obstructing His help. Just like a doctor wants to treat a patient, and all the patient has to do is cooperate. Stop interfering with the treatment and the doctor will cure. So like that, we will be cured. We just have to stop interrupting. We just have to stop letting ourselves be distracted. So God will help us. So there should not be a wrong emphasis on this. The proper as devotees, we have to chant Hare Krishna, no doubt. But it is not our chanting that will purify us. It is Krishna's mercy that will purify us. Let's move forward. Now Krishna will start talking about the process of Pratyahar. As I said, we are going from sadhana to saddha. So shanai shanai ruparamed buddhyadhati gruhitaya atma samstam mana kritva nakinchidapi chintayet. So shanai shanai, slowly, step by step. Uparamed. Uparamed means to slow down, to calm down, to silence. Slowly, gradually, step by step. The word shanai shanai itself conveys you. Slowly, gradually. And how does one do that? Buddhya dhriti gruhitaya. Buddhya. Buddhya means intelligence. And how is this intelligence? Dhriti gruhitaya. Dhriti is actually determination or conviction. So actually our determination comes from our conviction in many ways. If I'm convinced about something, I'll be determined to do it. So determination is internal, conviction is external. Both of them are related. So now Krishna is saying, buddhya dhriti gruhitaya. We don't just need intelligence, we need intelligence sustained by conviction. For example, when I'm taking a treatment, if the treatment involves some painful procedures, then I may know, understand with my intelligence, that this treatment is going to cure me. So I should do it. But when I actually have started taking the treatment, and initially the discomfort, but it also cured me. Then after that, when I take the treatment, then I'll find it does really cure me. So that's why we need both. We need intelligence and we need conviction. When there's intelligence sustained by conviction, then there is cure. Otherwise, there is no cure. So that's why no cure means the sense of curative potency is still there, but we don't consistently practice. That's why we don't get the cure. So, buddhya dhriti gruhitaya. Intelligence sustained by conviction. Buddhya dhriti gruhitaya. So what should we do? Just like a child, when he goes to doctor, the child doesn't have the intelligence to understand. The doctor's medicine will cure me. But buddhya, the mother understands. The child, when the child experiences, this was irritating, this injection. But afterward, it made me feel much better. He says, yes, then I will do it. Then I will take it. Buddhya, dhriti, gruhitaya. Dhriti means conviction. Buddhya, dhriti, gruhitaya. What should one do is, atma samstham manaha kritva. Fix the mind on the soul. Manaha is mind. Atma samstam, situated on the soul. Atma samstam manaha kritva nakinchid api chintayet. Don't think about anything else. Krishna is giving a very categorical instruction. Nakinchid api chintayet. Don't think about anything else. How is it possible for someone to not think about anything else? It is by steady practice. So, once one is convinced that actually the material reality is all deceptive. It is treacherous. It will betray me. It will promise pleasure and it will give me misery. Then one will be able to focus and understand that actually I have to turn. I have to turn away from the material reality towards the spiritual reality. And how I turn from the material reality to the spiritual reality is by conviction and practice. So understand, there's nothing substantial over here. So let me move towards that and let me focus on that. And when the focus does on that, we can move forward steadily, onwards. So here Krishna is talking about a stage of, in Pratyahara what happens? One shuts out all the sense objects. So one turns inwards and one puts out all the stimuli that are outwards. So we shouldn't become impatient in our spiritual practice. Sometimes we'll find that we want to fix the mind in one way, but still the mind goes off another way. Or fix it on one way, but still it goes another way. So how do we deal with it? Shanai, shanai. Gradually, step by step. Nothing great in this world is achieved overnight. Everything great requires effort. So fixing the mind on Krishna and training ourselves to be Krishna conscious is not going to happen overnight. It will require steady practice. day after day, month after month, shanai, shanai, gradually. One of the biggest obstacles on the spiritual path can be too much impatience with oneself. You know, we shouldn't be impatient with ourselves. We should be impatient as far as our endeavors are concerned. If I'm sleeping during chanting, I must wake up and chant. But if my mind is wandering, if I'm too impatient with myself, then I'll never be able to treat myself. Because I'll just get discouraged and I'll give it up. We can't be impatient. We have to understand that the purification will take time. Just as when we want to cook some food item, we want it fast, but it takes its own time. If you want to harvest crops, it takes its own time. So nature has its own course. So one of the reasons for discouragement in spiritual life is impatience. So even if it takes time, no matter how long it takes, I will keep practicing. I started practicing, I knocked down my conditions. Again I get up. Again I get knocked off. Again I get up. So if we become impatient with the fight, the only result will be that we'll give up the fight. We'll give up the fight. But we patiently go. No matter how long it takes. We may say, actually every time I'm committing the same mistake, I'm falling back to the same things. What is the hope for me to become reformed? No, there is hope. Because every day that we are practicing devotional service, we are becoming stronger. We are becoming purer. And as we keep becoming stronger and purer, we will eventually, that purity will manifest. So, when we are, say, fighting a boxing match, you know, every time a person is doing exercise and taking a nutritious diet, the person becomes stronger. Still, the opponent may knock a person down. But the only way the person is going to win the match is by keeping on persevering. So, shanai, shanai, gradually, step by step. So, this is from the study of the Prabhupada saying that by proper conviction and clearance, one should gradually cease sense activity. This is called as pratyahara. Pratyahara is the fifth stage in yoga. And then, the mind being controlled by conviction, meditation and cessation of the senses should be situated in trance or samadhi. So this is the perfection. So pratyahara to samadhi. This is the inner progression it's talked about. Now, when we wonder that, what does it mean to do this slowly? The mind keeps running here and there. So what do we do about it? That Krishna describes in the next verse. Yato yato nishchalati. Manaschanchalam asthiram tatastato niyamyaitad atmanyeva vashamnayet yato yato nishchalati. Wherever and whenever the mind wanders, yato yato. Remember we discussed earlier, this sort of describers come several times in the Bhagavad Gita. That was yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bhartha. Yada yada means wherever and whenever. So similarly, yato yato means wherever and whenever the mind wanders. So whenever means sometimes the mind may wander the most inappropriate times. You know, we are in the temple thinking of Krishna and the mind wanders to sinful thoughts. We feel ashamed of ourselves. Why is the mind thinking like this? Whenever, it may be early morning hours, which are very conducive for spiritual life, still the mind goes off to sense gratification. It doesn't matter. Wherever and whenever the mind wanders, bring it back. Yato yato nishchalati manaschanchalam asthiram. Recognize something to be the nature. Chanchalam asthiram. This is the nature of the mind. So, we can't change the nature of nature. So, material nature means it drags our consciousness down by default. Only when we are internally very spiritually attracted towards Krishna, then when we see material nature, we start thinking about using it in Krishna's service. But till then, it's like gravity. If I leave an object, it's going to fall. But similarly, the mind is going to wander. It's a default nature. Manaschanchalam asthiram. Know that it is going to happen like this. And what should you do? Tatastato. So wherever and whenever it happens, tatastato niyamyaitad. Niyamyaitad. Regulated. Atmanyeva vashamnaye. Bring it under the vasha. Bring it under the control of the Atma. In that way, when one acts, one will become purified, one will become steady, one will become advanced. Atmanyeva vasham nayed. So Prabhupada talks about the Godas and the Goswami. What is the difference between the two? The Godas, so one who controls the mind and therefore the senses is called as Goswami or Swami, and one who is controlled by the mind is called Godas or servant of the senses. So now Prabhupada is using an interesting terminology over here. he's using that actually both of them face the battle. But one who wins the battle and one who loses the battle. The person who wins the battle is the Goswami. The person who loses the battle is Godas. Now, it's not that this is a permanent and unchangeable designation. Now, we ourselves may be Godas now, but as we keep practicing Krishna consciousness, we'll become Goswami. And the whole idea is changing our responses. We can't change our stimuli too much. The world will keep giving us provocative stimuli, but we change our responses. So the difference between the Goswami and Godas is not in the stimuli. Both will be exposed to sensual stimuli, but there is no sensual response from the Goswami. So generally, when temptations come, the Godas says, oh, yes. The Goswami says, no. The Godas says, welcome, I was waiting for you. Goswami says, get out, there's no place for you here. So the Godas says, you're not welcome, wait, later. The Goswami says, nothing doing. So now, and this is the difference. Now in some cases we see that even the Goswami may say later. See, when the Godas says later, the intention is, yes, now is not a proper time, but in private later on, we'll enjoy. So the Godas' intention is to enjoy. Now we see Haridas Thakur also, when the prostitute came to him at night, what did he tell her? Later. So he told her later. But the difference was between him and Godas at our stage when we say later is that we have an intention to enjoy, but we are just waiting for the right time. Haridas Thakur had no intention to enjoy. His saying later was simply to purify her so that when she was purified, she would also become a devotee. Now Krishna describes further. When one lives like this, then what happens? Prashanta manasam hi enam yoginam sukham uttamam upaiti shanta rajasam brahma bhutam akalmasham. So prashanta, this word has come third time in the Bhagavad Gita in this chapter now. Prashanta, shanta is peaceful, prashanta is deeply peaceful. Manasam hi enam. So actually, we all feel that our mind is very restless and we want peace of the mind. But how will we get peace of the mind? We cannot have peace without the battle. When there is an enemy, the enemy has to be subdued. Then only we can have peace. So the mind is filled with agitating emotions and that is what is making us restless. The way we will get peace is by crushing those agitating emotions. So, when we say, keep saying no to lust, keep saying no to greed, keep saying no to anger, and gradually they go away. And then prashanta manasam, then the mind becomes peaceful. And when the mind becomes peaceful, the yogi turns inwards. And inwards, in the contemplation of the Supreme Lord, in the Paramatma manifestation, or whichever manifestation is, yoginam sukham uttamam, one experiences the ultimate happiness. And what is the nature of that ultimate happiness? What is one contemplating now? Upaiti shantarajasam. Shantarajasam. One becomes very peaceful, very calm. Shantarajasam. Becomes peaceful and then Brahma Bhutam Akalmasham. One comes to the Brahma Bhuta platform and the Brahma Bhuta platform is Akalmasha. Kalmasha is contaminations. No contaminations. So contaminations constrain and constrict our consciousness to the realm of matter. Contaminations constrain. Constrain means limit. They constrain and constrict. Our consciousness can't expand to spirit. So when a person is filled with lust and a person sees a potentially sexually attractive person, a potential partner, then the person cannot see that that person as anything more than the body. It's nearly impossible. Why? Because the contaminations constrain and constrict the flow of our consciousness to the realm of matter. And they don't allow us to perceive a higher reality. Constrain means to limit and constrict means to choke, practically speaking. So when the contaminations are no longer there, then the flow of consciousness becomes expanded in terms of the area over which it can cover. If there's a pipeline and the pipeline is choked at a particular place, then the water might can have a forceful flow, but what comes out is just a trickle. So like that, the consciousness of the soul can expand over my spiritual reality, all of spiritual reality. But when the anarthas are there, when the contaminations are there, the contaminations drag the consciousness down and keep it at the material level. So when it's akalmasham, when one is freed from contaminations, then one can be Brahma Bhutam. One situates oneself on the spiritual platform. And Upahiti Krishna, this is one of the beautiful verses. Every word is so filled with profounding. Upahiti Shantarajasam. So Krishna correlates, brings together in the same verse, Prashanta Manasam and Shantarajasam. So when does the mind become peaceful? When the passion is pacified. Rajasa is passion. Shanta is peaceful. Shanta Rajasam. When the passion is pacified, then the person becomes steady. Upaiti Shanta Rajasam. Brahma Bhutam Akalmasham. Akalmasham means there is no more contamination. There is no more suffering. There is no more misdirection of consciousness. So now let's move forward and discuss how this happens. Krishna describes this stage way further. This will happen, Krishna says, by regular practice. Yunjan evam sadatmanam yogi vigata kalmashah sukhena brahma samsparsham atyantam sukham ashnute yunjan evam. When one engages oneself sadatmanam, when one engages oneself constantly in this way, yogi vigata kalmashah. So Krishna used in the previous verse, Krishna used the word akalmasham. So here he uses the word yogi vigata kalmashah. So when one engages oneself in this way, one becomes akalmashah. Yogi vigata kalmashah. And then sukhena brahma samsparsham. Then one has contact with Brahma. Sukhena. Sukha that comes from sparsha. Some sparsha is contact. The sparsha word is often used for physical contact, but sparsha essentially means contact of any form. Some sparsha. So Brahma samsparsha. What does contact with Brahma mean? Actually, the soul is able to perceive spiritual reality and relish spiritual reality. This Brahma samsparsha is not exactly that. Say if we go in the temple hall and touch the deities, that is not Brahma samsparsha. It's not just a physical contact. Yeah, if we get the opportunity to touch the feet of the deities and take their blessings, we're very fortunate. If we get the opportunity to dress the deities, that is also fortunate. But that is not primarily what is being talked about. Sukhena Brahma samsparsha means that we contact with Krishna through the purification of our consciousness and the redirection of our consciousness to the spiritual level of reality. Sukhena Brahma samsparsham. And what happens by that? Atyantam sukham. One gets the ultimate happiness. Supreme happiness. Atyantam sukham ashnute. One gets the highest happiness. So Krishna has used this word sukham atyantikam yattad buddhi grahimatindriyam. Krishna has used this word of ultimate happiness earlier once in the Bhagavad Gita, in this section itself, in the verse section from 6.20 to 23. He had said that when the yogi turns inwards, atyanta sukha, atyanta is superlative, the highest happiness. So actually these three verses, 28, 29 and 30, they, in one sense we can say, they talk about progressive levels of spiritual realization. They talk about Brahman realization, then Paramatma realization and then Bhagwan realization. So this verse can be said to refer to Brahman realization. One comes to the Brahman platform. Sukham atyantikam yattat. So atyantikam sukham ushnate. Atyantam sukham. So by Brahma samsparsha. Now when the yogi is moving forward, when the yogi turns inward, the yogi first pursues the all-pervading spiritual reality, the spiritual substance that underlies the material appearance. And then as the yogi moves forward, the yogi sees something higher. That the next verse will talk about the Paramatma realization. This verse talks about the Brahman realization. Then the next verse talks about the Paramatma realization. So let us look at the next verse. Prabhupada says, this transcendental contact with the Supreme is called as Brahma Samsparsha. Now the word Samsparsha has come earlier in the Bhagavad Gita in 5.22. Yehi Samsparsha cha bhoga. That the bhoga that comes by contact of the senses of the sense objects. Krishna is talking about an entirely different kind of enjoyment. Brahma Samsparsha. So now we will talk about the next level of realization. Sarvabhutasthamatmanam sarvabhutani chatmani ikshate yoga yuktatma sarvatra samadarshanaha. So sarvabhutasthamatmanam, one who is situated in all bodies. Sarvabhutastham, one who is situated in all living beings. Sarvabhutani chatmani, and one in whom all living beings are situated. Ikshate yoga yuktatma. Ikshate means to see. And iksha, iksha is related to aksha. Aksha is eyes. So, Krishna is using the word. One will actually see with one's purified vision, one's spiritual vision. Yoga yuktatma. Yoga yuktatma. One who is engaged in the process of yoga. Sarvatra samadarshanaha. One is samadarshanaha. One is equipoised in looking at all things. Sarvatra samadarshanaha. So, sarvabhutastham atmanam. Now, what is this referring to? This is referring to the all-pervading, super-soul aspect of the Lord. Super-soul is situated in the heart of all living beings. So, we see that at one level, the super-soul is inside everything. At another level, everything is inside the super-soul. How is that? The super-soul is, as Shirodakshaya Vishnu, inside of everything. Andantarastha paramanu chayantarastham. Paramanu chayantaras, inside every atom. So, Ishvara sarvabhutanam hriddeshi Arjuna Dishtati. In 18.61, Krishna will say, situated in the hearts of all living beings. Then after that, he also says that this is referring to sarvabhutastham atmanam. The Lord, that particular absolute truth, whatever is being pursued, is in all living beings. And also, we know as Mahavishnu, all the universes are inside Him. They are inside Him. So, in that sense, sarvabhutani chatmani, one inside whom all living beings, who is inside all living beings, and one inside whom all living beings are. This is a paradox, but it is a paradox. How can something is inside everything, then everything can't be inside it? How is that possible? That is the inconceivable potency of the Lord. And we understand the inconceivable potency by looking at multiple manifestations of the Lord. That one manifestation refers to the Shirodakshaya Vishnu, who is inside everything. And then the Mahavishnu is the manifestation inside whom everything is. So we know that there are three levels of Mahavishnu. Prabhupada will mention these in the purport of 7.4, Mirapunalo Vayu. They are the four Purusha Avataras. So, first is Mahavishnu, from whom all the universes emanate. And then Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, who expands into the rich universe and from whom the navel, from whose navel the lotus comes on which Brahmaji is born. And then the whole all the universes are created. And then that Garbhodakshaya Vishnu expands further into each of the living beings' hearts from there. So in this way, the Lord is present inside everything and He is inside everything. And everything is inside Him. Sarvatra samadarshanaha. So the important point is samadarshanaha. The yogi sees everything equally. What is the basis of this equal vision? The basis of that equal vision is the understanding that everything is connected with the Lord. Everything is ultimately different levels of manifestation of the Supreme Lord's control and energy. This is referring to the super soul manifestation. Samadarshanaha. So Krishna is telling Arjuna that actually, now Krishna has earlier talked about Samadarshanaha in several places also. Panditaha Samadarshana is talked about. In 5.18, when he talks about how the wise person sees all living beings equally. So that was talking about all living beings. Now, that could well have been Atma Tattva, that could have been Paramatma Tattva. Vidya Vinaya Sampanne, Brahmane Gavihastini, Shunijayavashapakicha, Panditaha Samadarshana. that could have referred to both. But here, Krishna is referring to that living being within whom everybody is present. So that is clearly referring to the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul Manifestation. Now here, Srila Prabhupada translates it as me. Now we will not see any Maam in this verse. But Maam comes immediately in the next verse. So often Srila Prabhupada, to avoid ambiguity and to enhance clarity, gives things which are given later, earlier. So he's not necessarily importing something which is not there in the Gita. It is there in the Gita, but it is coming in a little later section. We know that when Prabhupada asked about this, and it's verses like this. Swami, some Mayavadi Surkamana Swami, there's no Krishna, there's no Maam in this verse. How are you putting Maam or how are you putting Krishna over here? Prabhupada said, now, where there is Krishna, in your mistranslations, you remove Krishna from there. Therefore, where Krishna is not there, I am putting Krishna there also. So, of course, that was Prabhupada's determination to glorify Krishna. And Prabhupada also gives us the flow carefully when his purport, so that we understand both ways. Now, Prabhupada quotes from the Smriti over here.
In the Smriti, this is confirmed.
Atatvacha, matrutvacha, atmahi paramohari. So, the Lord being the source of all beings is like the mother and the maintainer. The Lord is present in all living beings. Prabhupada is making this point over here. And Prabhupada throughout his purports explains, Krishna is talking about the perfection of yoga, but Prabhupada keeps talking about the perfection of Krishna consciousness, which automatically includes these levels of perfection. So now he will talk in the next verse about the direct perception of himself. Till now he has talked about that being who contains everyone. Now he will make it clear. Who is that being? So 28th was talking about Brahman realization. 29 is Paramatma realization. 30th will be clearly Bhagavan realization.
Yo mam pashyati sarvatra. Sarvam cha mai pashyati tasyaham na pranashyami. Sachamena pranashyati.
Yo mam pashyati sarvatra. One who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me. Sarvam cha mai pashyati. Tasyaham. Such a person na pranashyami. Such a person, I am never lost for such a person, nor is that person ever lost for me. Tasyaham na pranashyami. Sachamena pranashyati. So Krishna will use the word pranashyati once again in the famous verse Kaunteya Pratijanihi Name Bhakta Pranashyati. In 9.31, and Krishna has also used the word pranashyati earlier in 2.63d when he says buddhinashat pranashyati. Pranashyati can refer to fall, buddhinashat can lead to loss, bereavement, destruction. So Krishna is there, the word used, buddhinasa pranashati refers to fall down. When the intelligence is lost, then one falls back. Then, here also, it refers to fall. This person will never lost to me, and I am not lost to me. That means there is no fall from the spiritual relationship. So if we can perceive Krishna everywhere, then we are connected with Krishna, even if we are in this world. So actually, this can be understood at various levels. You see, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was seeing Krishna everywhere. And so were the gopis. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would see a Govardhan, ordinary mountain, ordinary hill, everything. See, this is Gopala. So whatever he saw, it reminded him of Krishna. So Prabhupada was asked, how can we see Krishna everywhere? Prabhupada says that when everything reminds us of Krishna, just like when a mother loves a child, then whatever the mother sees, connected, oh, these are my child's shoes, these are my child's stockings, these are my child's toys. And whatever she sees, because there is love, that all reminds her of the child whom she loves. So similarly, whatever Krishna, whatever the devotee sees in this world, the devotee understands everything is the energy of Krishna. So based on that, the devotee becomes attracted to Krishna. So we see this, Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra Sarvam Chamai Pashyati. In a most exalted stage, there can be multiple levels. Now we can, in a abstract theoretical sense, think, okay, when I see the when I see the sky, when I see the mountains, when I see the rivers, I can think, oh, all this is Bhumira, Poonala, Vayu, and all this is Krishna's energy. When we see the trees, okay,
all this is Krishna's energy.
That is one level of perception. The gopis demonstrate a far deeper level of Krishna consciousness, where whatever they see, when Krishna left them, then what happened? What happened when Krishna, when they're searching everywhere, and whatever they would see in connection with Krishna. They see a deer, a she-deer, they think, oh, they would ask some other living being, some animals that are there, have you seen Krishna? Have you seen Krishna? Have you seen Krishna? Whoever they would see, they would ask. And then they would say, oh, this animal is a male, and Krishna is a male, and males are hard-hearted. And one male will help another male only. One male will not help another female. So that a male will not. Then they say there's a she deer. Oh, then they say Tulsi. Oh, Tulsi is a female. She will help us. She will understand the plight of us female. She will tell us where is Krishna. And they see the she deer standing alone. Oh, then she start thinking that, oh, is it that you are also bereaved? No, is it that a he deer has left you just as we have been left by Krishna? So whoever they see over there, they actually try to ask them, where is Krishna? Please tell us, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? The gopis demonstrate that level of Yomam Pashyati Sarvat. They are seeing Krishna everywhere.
And
whatever they would see, they would think, oh, is this Krishna's sound? So when Krishna would go out in the forest, all day they would be waiting. When will Krishna come back? When will Krishna come back? And they would just be longing. So even when Krishna was not there, they were thinking of Krishna all the time. Yomam Pashyati Sarvatra. That's why Krishna told them eventually, when he sent the message through Uddhava, that separation from me is impossible. But the gopis were separated from Krishna, weren't they? Yeah, they may be separated in terms of they were not having the association of Krishna directly, in terms of his personal form, but still Krishna was present very much in their heart. And everything and everyone, they were seeing in connection with Krishna. It's a very exalted level of consciousness. And then Prabhupada quotes the famous verse from the Brahma Samhita.
5.38, where is this? Prema-anjuna-churita-bhakti-vilo-chanena Santaha-sadai-vardayeshu-vilo-kayanti Yam-shama-sundar-vachinti-guna-swarupam Govindamadipurusham-tamaham-bhajami.
So, Prema Anjana. It's like we can have Amrita Anjana. You know, there's an old ointment which people apply on the head. The head is burning, then they apply something. So, the idea is Anjana is like ointment. So, the claim of this particular ointment is that, okay, it'll act like Amrita. It'll make you peaceful. It'll be like nectar for you. Nothing in this world is actually Amrita. But the idea of Anjana. So, when a person is having some eye disease, then the eyes are, say, burning, and one is not able to see clearly because of that. Then something cools the eyes, something cleanses the eyes, something heals the eyes. We apply that, and the person starts seeing clearly. So like that, currently, our eyes are diseased. They are diseased by material desires. And because of that, we can see only material things right now. Prema anjana. Churita bhakti vilochanena. So when we apply the ointment of love, so it's interesting, ointment of prema. Actually, we quote this verse, but this verse is profound. First the verse says, bhakti vilochanena, and then it says, prema anjana. So the eyes of devotion and the ointment of love. So we all may say that I also have eyes of devotion. I'm trying to practice devotion service, and I look at Krishna, I think, this is my Lord. I want to offer my whole life to this Lord. So we have seen we have bhakti vilochanena. But bhakti is a stage. Bhakti is a stage-wise progression. We know there are 9 stages in bhakti. And the final stage in this progression is prema. So we have to have devotional eyes. And not only devotional eyes, we also have to have a loving disposition. So when we have both, that means we go through the process of devotional advancement and come to the level of prema. Then what? Then this is the vision that we get. Santaha sadaiva. The saintly people always see sadaiva. What? Rudayeshu vilokayanti. They see
within the heart, vilokayanti. What do they see? Yamshama sundara machinte guna swarupam.
They see shama sundara. And what is achinte guna swarupam? They see the samsundara, the heart of all living beings, in everyone's heart. And that person has achinte guna swarupam. Inconceivable qualities, and nature is also inconceivable. The form is inconceivable. And that Lord who is revealed through love, Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami, I offer my obeisances to that person, is described. So now, Krishna has, now there might be some confusion. In 29th verse, Krishna has said that, okay, that living being is in everyone, that absolute reality, is not mentioned what that absolute reality is. 29th is Sarvabhutastam Atmanam Sarvabhutani Chatmani. Everything is situated in that absolute truth, and that absolute truth is situated in everyone, that whatever it is. And now 30th Krishna has said, one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me. So now, is there a difference between the two? Is Krishna talking about two different seekers having two different visions? In the previous verse he said, there is something which one sees everywhere, samadarshana. And then he has said over here, it's one who sees me. So if there is any confusion, Krishna will make it very clear in the next verse that the two are the same. That means the reality that is perceived in 29, which is unnamed, and the reality that is perceived in 30th, and which is named as Mam, as Krishna, 31st makes it clear that both are referring to the same reality. So, one who sees the two equally, that's the next verse. So, let's look at this verse. Sarvabhutastvam yo Mam, majatyekatvama astitaha. Sarvatha vartamanopi sa yogi mai vartate. So sarvabhuta sthitam yomam. When one is situated, that living being who is situated in all, sarvabhuta sthitam. So this was referring to sarvabhuta sthamatmanam. It was chakra 29th verse. And mam was referred to in 30th verse. So sarvabhuta sthitam is 29th verse. Mam is 30th verse. And bhajatya ekattvam asthitaha. So one who worships, understanding ekatvam, that I and that absolute truth is situated in all living beings, is the same. Sarvatha vartamanopi, in all situations, yogi, so yogi, mayi vartate, yogi will be situated in me. That means, Krishna is very clearly stating over here that there is an absolute truth which is all pervading, and then I am there, one who sees both of them equally. Now, what happens is such a person becomes situated in me. The impersonalists say that actually there is Bhagavan, but higher than Bhagavan is Brahman. The Vaishnavas understand that Brahman is there and higher than Brahman is Bhagavan. Now Krishna is very clearly stating over here, one who sees that all-pervading reality and me, one who sees both of them to be same. What does Krishna say? He doesn't say that such a person becomes situated in Brahman. He says such a person becomes situated in me. So Mayavadis have the idea that once we go beyond Bhagavan, then we will become to Brahman realization. So first you meditate on some form, and then you go beyond that form to the formless reality. Then you will become situated in formless reality. So once we understand, actually form and formless are same only, but formless is lower level, formless is higher level. That is the Mayavadi idea. And once you understand the two are one, then you will go beyond the form to the formless. But Krishna says nothing doing, not like that. Krishna says, Now, of course, Krishna is not necessarily talking about anything formless over here. He is simply talking about all-pervading. And the impersonalists assume that is all-pervading has to be formless. But it is not necessary. Something can be all-pervading and still it can have form, because it can manifest it in multiple forms, so that it becomes all-pervading in multiple forms, like a super soul. The super soul is all-pervading because it's in limited forms. And it's present in each atom, in each soul, like that, with each living being. So, the point which Krishna is making over here is, first of all, what he said is 29 and 30th is the same. The all-pervading reality and I are the same. And one who understands this, sarvatha vartamanopi, in all times the yogi becomes situated in me. That means Krishna says that one who sees the all-pervading and the transcendental person, me, and me to be the same, such a person becomes situated in me. He is not saying such a person becomes situated in Brahman or in that all-pervasive reality. He becomes situated in me. That means me is referring to the higher reality, the highest reality among all. Sarvatha vartamanopi, in all situations. Sarvatha Vartamanopi will come once again in the 18th chapter also. I think 18.56. Sarva Karmani Kurvana Madhyapashaya. So Krishna sees over there also something like Sarvatha Vartamanopi. In all situations. The point is, Krishna is saying, in all situations, the person can be fixed in me. And Prabhupada again quotes the in the purport, the Jivan Mukta verse from Bhakti Samasu, which is quoted already twice in the Bhagavad Gita. And then Prabhupada quotes several other Vishnu verses over here, Narada Pancharatra. Dikkala Dhyana Vachinne Krishne Cheto Vidhaya Cha Tanmayo Bhavati Kshipram Jivo Brahmanyo Yojayet. So, Dikkaladya Anavachinne. Anavachinne means that is not limited. That Lord who is all pervading, who is not restricted by time and space, is beyond time and space. Krishne Cheto Vidhaya Cha. So, when one mix with consciousness of that absolute truth, Tanmayo Bhavati Kshipram Tanmaya. One becomes absorbed and attains the nature similar to Jiva Brahmani Yojayet. So Jiva becomes situated in the Brahmanic platform. So that means what this verse is essentially telling is that when the Jiva wants to fix the mind in the absolute truth, the Brahman, how the best way to do that? Fix it on Krishna. Krishna is Dikkala Dhyanavichinne. He is beyond time and space. And one will attain that nature, one will attain that transcendently Tanmayo. One will attain that nature by fixing the mind on the absolute truth in the form of Krishna. And then Prabhupada quotes again from the Smriti Shastra, Eko Vai Paro Vishnu Sarva Vyapina Samshayaha Aishwaryadrupamekamcha Suryava Bahudheyate. So Eka Eva Paro Vishnu. There is one absolute truth. Sarva Vyapina Samshayaha. He is one, but he is Sarva Vyapina. He is all pervading. So Prabhupada is quoting these verses to point out how the all-pervading reality and the personal reality are one and the same. Both the verses are talking about the same point. Aishwarya Drupame Kamcha. So, the Aishwarya. Aishwarya Rupa. Surya Vat Bahudheyate. So, by his inconceivable potency, the all-pervasive manifestation and the form of the Lord, they are one and the same. Just as the sun and the sunlight are one and the same. And now Krishna will conclude this section, this particular description, in the next verse where he talks about whom he says is the Parayas Yogi. Previous verse he said that such a person will always stay in me at all situations. Now Krishna will tell whom he considers to be the highest yogi. So, Atma Upam Yena Sarvatra Samapashyati Arjuna Sukham Vayadiva Dukham Sayogi Paramomataha. So, Atma Upam Yena, by comparing with the Atma, Upama, Sarvatra, all living beings, Samam Pashyati, one who sees all living beings are similar. Yo Arjuna, Arjuna, one who sees like this. Sukham va yadi va dukkham, in their happiness and their distress, Sayogi Paramo Mataha. So who is the topmost yogi? One who sees the true equality of all living beings, in their happiness and their distress, by comparison with oneself. That means what Prabhupada explains very beautifully, that this verse is a call for compassion. That one understands. When I was not spiritually conscious, one compares all living with oneself. When I was not doing this, I was miserable. When I was not Krishna conscious, I was miserable. Now when I become Krishna conscious, I become happy. Therefore, actually Krishna consciousness is the way to happiness. Not just for me, for all living beings. Because essentially all living beings are similar to me. So what has made me happy will make others happy also. So when the yogi goes to the highest stage of perfection, Krishna, even in the heart of the chapter on Ashtanga Yoga, doesn't consider the topmost yogi to be just one who is lost in inner meditation. It's that inner meditation and the inner realization, the inner fulfillment, leads to a comparison with others. Oh, others are also, they're like me only. So what has made me happy will make them also happy. Therefore, let me share this with others. So in the Ashtanga Yoga chapter, Krishna is making a call for compassion. A call for, we could say, outreach, preaching. Yogi understand that. Actually, I have tasted such nectar, so I should let others also taste this nectar. And therefore, let me share Krishna consciousness. When Prabhupada was preaching all over the world, there are many yogis yoga had become quite popular. So, but there are many yoga teachers who would not actually come out from the Himalayas. There are many advanced yogis who just stay in the Himalayas. They would say, one yoga teacher had become quite famous, but he was living in the Himalayas only. So some reporter from some magazine went there and interviewed that person in the Himalayas. He says, he was impressed by this yogi. He says, you have so much wisdom. Why don't you come to me? Why don't you come to the West and share this wisdom with the world? He said, a person is thirsty and the person comes to the river doesn't go to the person. That is the attitude of some yogis. But what is Prabhupada's attitude? Yes, actually people are thirsty, but there's so much an illusion that they don't even realize that they're thirsty. People need spirituality, people need Krishna, but they don't think that they need Krishna. Therefore, we go out to the people. So, just like normally when people are sick, people go to the hospital, but when there is an emergency, and the hospital staff comes out to the people. So, Kali Yuga is like a spiritual emergency. And that's why we go out in the holy name, we are Jagannatha Yatra going everywhere. And beyond that, the yogi also sees that yes, everybody is suffering. So, let me share Krishna consciousness with everyone, and then they will become happy. So, in this way, in the perfection of yoga stage, it is not just inner meditation that is perfection. It is inner contemplation, but it is outer compassion and the desire for benefiting others. That is the perfection of yoga. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.